On today's episode of the Consumerism Commentary Podcast, we look at the possible widespread return of credit card application fees. Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Jay Frosting, here with Flexo, the founder of Consumerism Commentary. Hi there, Flexo.
Hi, Jay.
We're joined today by Matt Schultz, the Vice President of Content at InvestingAnswers.com. Matt, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
You wrote an article recently about the possible return of credit card application fees. Could you tell us the details of what's changing and why?
It's all about what fees are allowed to be charged under the Credit Card Act, the big landmark pro-consumer regulation that came into effect a few years back. And what the issue is that there is a limit as to how much in total fees a credit card issuer can charge a credit card holder in the first year they have the card. So the total amount of fees cannot total more than 25% of your overall credit limit. So if you have a credit card with a $500 limit, the most in fees you could charge is $125. However, there was some gray area in the rule, and the Federal Reserve and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau clarified the rule in 2011 to say that rule doesn't just cover fees that are applied after you get the card. It also applies to fees that you pay before your application is accepted. And the most common example of that would be an application fee, where you're essentially paying for the right to get a credit card. Well, First Premier, who caters to folks with bad credit who are just looking to get a card to kind of help themselves out of a bad situation, called foul on that and basically said that the government was overreaching a little bit, and that the Credit Card Act never really said that application fees and things like that should be included in the 25% cap.
So wasn't that really the point of the Credit Card Act, though, really to just set up some basic guidelines that the regulators would then go and provide details around?
Yes, and that was definitely right. And they were definitely going after issuers that charged fees that were seen as excessive or unnecessary or just not consumer-friendly. And First Premier definitely saw a threat to them, because they have in the past charged pretty good amounts of fees of various kinds and even really high APRs that are well above what the industry standard is. So they, fearing for their lives, essentially, took the government to court. And in late last year, a district judge in South Dakota said, you know, hey, we agree. And since then, the government has been working to say, okay, you know, what are we going to do with this now that the court has kind of put the kibosh on this?
What was the legal argument?
The issue was, according to First Premier, that basically the clarification that the Fed and the consumer watchdog agency gave was beyond the bounds of the Credit Card Act's original intention. So basically the idea was the Credit Card Act was to protect people once they got the card, as opposed to protecting them in the process of acquiring the card.
I guess I'm surprised that First Premier didn't just try to do an end run around the law, as we saw the other big banks doing and just shift the fee from an application fee to a higher first year annual membership.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure that they probably would have done something like that if this had not gone their way. Yeah, yeah. And I can't help but wonder if they might actually be a little bit surprised by this, because in conversations that I've had with people and things that I've read, it just seemed like it was a little bit of a Hail Mary, where you're just kind of putting it up and saying, well, let's see how it goes. And then all of a sudden, the guy, the receiver in the end zone, catches the pass and everybody celebrates.
Okay. Now, is the government going to appeal this decision and bring it to a higher court?
I'm not sure, actually. But I think that the fact that they issued the ruling the way they did, kind of backing down on that, is an indication that they either don't plan on doing it or they wouldn't feel very confident that they would be successful if they did it. So what book means essentially is that there's no limit now on fees that banks can charge people who apply for a credit card.
There's no limit on the application fee, but there's still the original first year limit up to 25%?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
And when we talk about fees, we're talking about interest rates plus membership fees, plus maybe something else that I'm not thinking of?
Monthly service fees, any of the kind of laundry list of fees that could be thrown in. So what'll be interesting to see is that now that application fees have been cleared, it'll be interesting to see if they become more pervasive, because it's one thing to have an issuer who traffics in dealing cards to folks with bad credit to do something like that. It would be something entirely different if, you know, American Express or other higher end places decided to, you know, do that to kind of make up some revenue that the Credit Card Act might have taken away from them.
Let's talk about these application fees themselves rather than just the legal availability of them.
Sure.
Most people don't need to pay application fees when they sign up for a credit card today. And as far as I know, it's been that way for a long time. Obviously, people who are in more desperate need of credit, either to repair their situation or whatever the reason may be, they might be willing and have no other option but to sign up for a credit card that requires an application fee. Do you think that this ruling will mean that more cards will see these application fees, or will they be still restricted to those with bad credit or those who are in most desperate need for credit?
I think that it's likely that at least some other more mainstream cards will try this out. Simply because of the desire for extra revenue, because that's what it's all about, after all. However, what will be interesting is to see what the market will bear, if it will bear anything, because as we've seen with, for example, B of A with their $5 debit card use fee, people blew a gasket over that. So the public appetite for these kinds of fees is not exactly strong.
And I feel like when Bank of America announced that a couple months early, they weren't really announcing it so much as floating the idea to see how people react.
Right. And I think that's accurate. And I could definitely see somebody stepping out on a limb and trying to do something like that as well with this, just because of the potential money involved.
First Premier, as an example, is the company that has a 79.9% interest rate, which is absurd. And there have to be some better alternatives for people with bad credit who need or feel like they need access to extra income, even if it's just an emergency. Isn't 79.9% even higher than like a payday loan, which is maybe the worst of all options?
79% is pretty ridiculous, and they haven't had that for year and a half, something like that now. Okay. But they've slowly been kind of tapering it back. It was at, I think it was at 59% for a while. Then they've been moving it down, you know, 10% or so just over time as the market will bear. And now their cards are at 36%, which still is an absurdly high amount and well beyond even the penalty rate that most other mainstream cards have. Mm-hmm. Pretty much anything you can do, any other way that you could get a loan would probably be better than having a, mm-hmm. you know, 36 or 40 or whatever percent APR.
Yeah, and I'd be careful if we're saying that even at 79.9% that this card is worse than payday loans, because payday loans are meant as short-term loans, and they right. charge a fee. They charge a fee based on the total amount borrowed. And
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah, and so the if you calculate that as an interest rate, you could end up with a 400% APR or 1,000% APR. Wow. But most people yeah. don't calculate it that way, and the payday loan people don't want you to calculate it that way. They sure. want to just show that, well, it's a $15 fee for $100 borrowed or something like that. Right.
Yeah. Aside from going the payday loan route, which depending on how bad your credit is, you may not have too many other options.
Right.
Anything you can do to avoid a 36% APR credit card is a wise thing to do.
Back in the late 90s, I felt like I needed a computer and got my dad to co-sign on a Gateway 2000 computer installment agreement with me, and I believe the interest rate was 39.9%, which I had to move back in with my parents just to be able to afford paying off the computer. Otherwise, it was just going to go on for years and years. So to imagine something upwards of 80% is staggering.
Yeah, and you wonder why you wonder what it was like to sit in on that meeting. Where somebody says, "Hey guys, what do you say we bring the rate up to 79.9% and see what people are going to think?"
There must have been some spreadsheet that proved that they would still have customers afterward.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe it's a little of the "there's no such thing as bad press" kind of thing, because it certainly got a lot more people knowing who they are.
So now, what's the current state of this application fee coming back? I think that you wrote it's up for public comment.
Yes, as is, you know, typical with these sort of proposals, the government has put it up for public comment, and you can put in comment online through I believe it's late June, and then they'll take that into account. And sometimes they get yelling, screaming comments and make changes, but other times it's just more of a formality almost, and they just put the rule out as is. But yeah, that's where things stand. But with First Premier, they're charging this application fee of I believe it's $95, which when you consider that that a lot of times their credit limit on that particular card is only $300. It's a little crazy.
And this application fee, just to be clear, it's not refundable. If you are not approved for the card, you don't get that application fee back, correct?
I believe that's correct. And what the terms and conditions say is that the fee must be paid in full before the credit account is opened, to offset the risk associated with the account. And if you don't pay it within 85 days, your application will be withdrawn.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like a secured card where you will present a deposit up front and then your charges will go against that deposit.
Correct. That's my understanding of it.
Are there other parts of the Credit Card Act or subsequent rule clarification that you think might be rolled back or that are being challenged in any courts?
I'm not aware of any other lawsuits that are going on to kind of tackle any of the big provisions, but I do know that the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Mr. Cordray, has been quoted as saying that, you know, if anything, he would like to actually kind of build on some more, and specifically potentially take on the way that credit card agreements are written. And we've all seen them. They're completely unintelligible for the most part. And he has indicated that that might be something that they would take on if the political environment is there and the aptitude is there.
Similar to how there were some improvements made to the credit card statements to make those easier to read.
Correct.
And illustrate how long it would take to pay them off under different scenarios.
Yes.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, actually did do some good. I believe there were some studies showing that people started paying them down faster as a result.
I believe that's correct. And it's sort of the scared straight idea where you see it in front of you how much this is going to cost, and it may force you to act a little faster than you might otherwise.
But the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's ability to regulate effectively really depends on the government's appetite for regulation. It always seems to be a battle in Congress, but what do you see happening if there's a change in political party in the White House administration?
Well, it seems to me that even though it may not be the first thing he tackles, I would imagine that a President Romney would probably do his best to, if not take the agency down, at least restrict its power. Because from everything that I've seen and the comments from the Republicans who have been opposing this, the issue that they have isn't so much with the intention of the agent of the bureau, which was to kind of streamline everything so people don't have to figure out which regulator to go to. They can just go to one place. It's more of the idea that the agency would be too powerful and potentially unchecked, and that's the biggest concern, is the unchecked bureaucracy. So given that, you can see where the agency would be trying to get a lot of stuff done in the short term, just in case.
I think we tackled a lot of those questions about unchecked power in an earlier episode, which I'll try to remember to link to in the description for this one. What sort of power does the executive branch have over the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? I imagine they can appoint people, but aside from that, I don't think they would be able to just shut it down. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. I mean, I believe it's mostly a congressional thing.
Yeah.
And that was actually part of the debate of the constitutionality of the way that President Obama named the director, because Republicans came out and said that the statute that created the agency said that the director had to be Senate approved before the agency would get any of its power.
Okay.
But when President Obama did a recess appointment and he ruffled a lot of feathers and you know, stirred up a lot of anger about this whole thing.
Mm. For at least a year after this last recession started, it seemed like there was some data indicating that people were more aggressively paying down their credit cards and saving more. Is that still true in 2012?
Personally, I have my doubts as to exactly how much people paid off over time. I think that an awful lot of the reduction in debt that we've seen in government numbers has to do as much with banks slashing credit limits and writing off and charging off debt as it does with people embracing frugality.
Oh, I see.
And there's definitely some of both, but I think that it can be risky to overstate the turn to frugality that people made in 08, 09, 2010.
Yeah.
I think that now what we're seeing since credit card issuers and banks are starting to do a little better and freeing up credit a little bit more, I think what we're seeing now is likely the result of frugality and people being afraid for jobs and that sort of thing. But I don't think that it's necessarily always been the main driver.
Mm. That's good detail. Thank you, Matt, for explaining that all to us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.
And thanks, Flexo, for helping out.
Anytime.
That was Matt Schultz from investinganswers.com. Join us again next week for more great personal financial advice and information.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. We welcome your feedback. Please email us at podcast@consumerismcommentary.com. To subscribe to the podcast or to listen to this or other episodes, visit us at consumerismcommentary.com/pod or search for Consumerism Commentary on iTunes. The Consumerism Commentary Podcast is hosted and produced by Tom Dubeck, Brian J. Bush, and Luke Landis. The music is composed and performed by Mindcube. The podcast was founded by Luke Landis.